everyone, even though we don't have a full committee, I'm going to go ahead and convene the meeting. We've got a very rich agenda, and I want to make sure, especially people that came from a distance, get a chance to talk. So, you ready, Steve? With that gavel, I have just convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for April the 21st, 2015. We are gathered today for the purpose of a public hearing on Senate Bill 5525, the Oregon Business Development Department. Mr. Bender, would you give us an introduction to where we are in the Ways and Means process and what we're going to hear today? And I would invite Mr. Robbins to come forward so he's ready to go when Mr. Bender is done.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the first of 2 days that we have scheduled for phase two presentations on the Business Oregon budget. During phase two, we've asked the agency to come back to provide more information on topics and on their budget request. Today, they are prepared to discuss two of their requests, requests relating to the Regional Solutions Program and to Oregon Inc. These are two of the larger budget requests in their requested budget. Tomorrow they will continue and talk about all of their policy option packages and speak to you about their priorities given limited funding.
Thank you very much. Just by way of administrative matters, I know that there are people that have come from a distance, and I'm going to tend to prioritize them first out of respect for the distance they have traveled. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Sean Robbins, Director of Business Oregon, and as Mr. Bender has already outlined, and I will not recover, we're here for two further follow-up days of testimony on a few items, Regional Solutions and the Governor's Office of Regional Solution Centers and the Oregon Innovation Council today, priority policy option packages tomorrow. The part you'll hear from me today is actually very short. This is it. We've actually reached out to many of the leaders of these initiatives within the Oregon Innovation Council to be here before you today, as well as Annette Leba from the Regional Solution Centers and members of the convening committees around the state. For a brief reminder, as you'll recall from our first 4 days of testimony last month, you'll recall the major theme of all of our work going forward and the context in which these specific funding packages come within is inside the Grow Our Own strategy. And you'll remember that that is a focus first and foremost on retaining the companies we have, helping new ones start up through developing a healthy entrepreneurial ecosystem, and then focusing on external targeted recruitment going forward. So with that, not having to rehash that history from last month, but just to serve as a reminder of the context in which our budget requests are contextualized, I'd like to introduce Annette Leba from the Regional Solutions Center, who I believe for the next half hour or so will be walking you through some of the questions that you had about that program.
Thank you very much. I would invite Ms. Leba up, and it's going to be the or so part of a half an hour. So the more quickly you can go through this, the better.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Johnson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Annette Leba. I'm the Regional Solutions Director in the Governor's Office. Thank you for inviting me back to present more information on the Regional Solutions Program and on our budget. I want to give you a quick run of show for my presentation. I'll start and give you a brief overview of Regional Solutions, talk about Policy Option Package 117. I did this last time. Let me move this out of the way. Policy Option Package 117, and I'll talk about the priorities in 8 of the 11 region, and then there'll be a panel here to talk about the priorities for the remaining 3 regions, and we'll wrap up with Business Oregon giving you an overview of Policy Option Package 116. So the purpose of the Regional Solutions Program really is to solve problems and coordinate state action, specifically focused on economic and community development. So we're really focused on promoting, expanding, or preventing the decline of industries and businesses all around the state. The vision for Regional Solutions is to leverage all private sector, public sector, philanthropic, and even higher ed resources that exist in a region to address what the priorities are in the region in order to make progress on economic and community development. The way the Regional Solutions Program is set up is we have 11 regions. They're depicted on the map here. The 11 regions have been strategically aligned with the 11 economic development districts, federally designated economic development districts around the state. You'll also note on this map there are six stars. Those are the locations of the Regional Solutions Centers. So there are Regional Solutions Centers where staff have been co-located to maximize the opportunities for them to collaborate and be effective working together in Tillamook, Portland, Medford, LaGrand, Bend, and Eugene. For each region, there's a Regional Solutions Advisory Committee, a state agency team, and a governor's coordinator. The Regional Solutions Advisory Committee, well, let me actually back up for a second. Regional Solutions Program was established in statute in February of 2014 in House Bill 4015. That statute identified five key core members of all the Regional Solutions Advisory Committees that are appointed by the governor. The first one is a governor's convener. The second one is a private sector representative. The third one is a philanthropic representative. And then we have recommendations from the Association of Oregon Counties and the League of Oregon Cities. That this group has the opportunity then to add members to the core advisory committee that they believe are necessary to address what the priorities are in each of the regions. The roles of the advisory committee, they really have three roles. First is to establish regional priorities for community and economic development in the region. They assist regional solutions coordinators and teams with connecting to local resources, whether they're local government, private sector, or philanthropic resources. And then they consider, review, and recommend regional implementation project proposals. And I might note here that the policy option package 117 is the mechanism for funding the preliminary regional implementation project proposals for the upcoming biennium. The other component of the Regional Solutions Program in terms of structure is that we have Regional Solutions teams. The core members of the teams are the Departments of Transportation, Land Conservation Development, Housing, Environmental Quality, and Business Oregon, both the business development officers and the infrastructure folks. And really the role of the team is to make things happen in the region. As I've already mentioned, there are six regional solutions centers around the state where we've co-located the core regional solutions team members, and leadership and coordination for the teams is provided by the governor's office. I also want to make a note here in light of the questions presented to me for this presentation that House Bill 4015 also requested seven natural resource agencies to develop plans for how they would participate in regional solutions teams, because what we saw through the first 2 years of implementing the Regional Solutions Program is that natural resource issues are priorities in a number of regions around the state. And the way that those plans were developed by the seven natural resource agencies is that they reviewed the regional priorities from around the state. They also reviewed the work plans for all of the regional solutions teams. And based on that work, there are two policy option packages being put forward by state agencies to support increased involvement by them in regional solutions teams. And those two policy option packages are for Water Resources Department, Package 105, and for the Oregon Department of Agriculture, Package 410. This is the current organization in the governor's office for regional solutions. So our current service level is 8 FTE, with a base budget of about $2.7 million. We have three positions that were added to the governor's office as limited duration positions for this biennium, which we are requesting as permanent positions in the governor's policy option package 101. And you'll see those as polka-dotted on, but orange on this graphic. The two positions in brown are positions in the Business Oregon budget that were added in the Christmas tree bill during the last session as limited duration positions, and those are the two of the three positions in policy option package 113 that you'll hear more about tomorrow.
Quick question.
Senator Hansel.
Those new ones, Metro and Central, where are they currently located?
Chair Johnson, Senator Hansel, they're not new positions. They're existing limited duration positions that we're looking to convert to permanent positions.
My mistake, sorry.
Senator, Representative Whitsitt.
Back to the Oregon Water Resources Department, number 105. Can you tell me where to find that?
Senator Johnson, Representative Whitsitt, that is a policy option package that is being considered by the Natural Resources Subcommittee for Ways and Means.
Follow up.
So we don't know what it is. Is there a fiscal attach, or are you giving them money, or what?
Senator Johnson, Representative Whitsitt, it's a general fund request that the Water Resources Department has made as part of their budget request.
Oh, up how much?
Rather than
having I have
the
number.
I'll ask
right
you to,
here.
Okay.
It's $206,664.
What I am going to do is to ask the professional staff to try to gather up from all of the agencies where there are specific asks, because we have regional solutions scattered throughout state agencies, and I think eventually, because they have fiscal ramifications, they're all going to come to Ways and Means, but it would be nice to see them in a unified display to understand fully where we're trying to go. Okay, and Mr. Bender has that. Please, any other questions before we continue? Please continue, Ms. Lima.
Thank you. One of the other questions that I received was what happened during this current biennium for regional priority implementation projects. And as you may recall from my earlier testimony, or perhaps not, we had a mix of regional priority projects that were directly funded by the legislature when they met in 2013. And then there were five regions that did not have priority projects funded. And the legislature in 2013 established the Regional Infrastructure Fund, which is the fund that we're looking to capitalize with Policy Option Package 117. So the 2013 projects are listed here. In the metro region, it really was around providing public access to Willamette Falls as part of the Blue Heron redevelopment. South Valley Mid-Coast region, it was support for the Regional Accelerator Innovation Network. For Northeast and Eastern Oregon, it was support for increasing the pace and scale of forest restoration activities. In Central Oregon, there was funding for OSU Cascades. And in Southern Oregon, the project that was funded directly by the legislature was a project called the WISE Project, which is Water Irrigation for Sustained Economy, which is a project that looks to do some piping for irrigation canals to both improve the water use efficiency and conserve water.
Colleagues, this raises an interesting policy question, and that is, if funding continues for regional solution, how does it travel? Because this was kind of a mixed bag in the budget. Some of these were place named. The WISE project was the RAIN project, the collaboratory. And I think getting some standardized vision of how the projects move through the budget is going to be very important so that the public can track it and it has some degree of transparency. So again, I have raised that with our professional staff, and I think they're going to be helping us get to a point where we can see that displayed. So please continue.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. So again, in 2014, the legislature capitalized the Regional Infrastructure Fund for $10 million. One of the prerequisites for releasing the funding was that Regional Solutions Program was established in statute. And once House Bill 4015 was adopted, the bonds were sold this past spring. And you can see the list of priorities on this next slide for how that money was invested in regional priorities. So in the South Central region, it was really focused on workforce development and increasing learning opportunities between Lake and Klamath County by synchronizing courses that were taught at Klamath Community College and allowing people in Lakeview to participate in those classes, and that's the Innovation and Learning Center. The next project that's listed is reducing barriers to economic development by reducing air emissions. In the North Central region, the funding was used to establish a revolving loan fund to address workforce housing needs. These are workforce housing needs for folks who are 80 to 120% average median income. South Coast region is focused on dredging, both the purchase and operations of a dredge for small ports. The North Coast region, their priority project was improving safety along the rail corridor in Rainier. And the Mid-Valley region had two infrastructure projects as well as a workforce development project.
Representative Whitsitt.
I just have a question regarding the $1.5 million for reduction of air pollution for the economic development. Is that the money the governor just spoke about last Thursday?
Senator Johnson, Representative Whitsitt, yes, it is. We just finalized the intergovernmental agreement to start spending that money.
Thank you.
So this this is really an overview of Policy Option Package 117, which, as I mentioned already, would capitalize the Regional Infrastructure Fund. What we asked each of the 11 advisory committees to do last year is to put forward preliminary projects. Projects are still being vetted, but based on, we really needed to see what the preliminary project mix would be so that we could identify the proper kinds of funding. So that's the mix that you see here in this slide, $7 million in lottery revenue to fund priorities such as support for entrepreneurship, workforce development, and $14 million in lottery bond revenue, which really is focused on capital construction and infrastructure needs. I will say that in to try to get at Senator Johnson, your point around discipline and how these things get funded, and the fact that there was a commitment in the innovation initiatives to fund the Regional Accelerator Innovation Network for $1 million, it meant that Regional Solutions asked for $1 million to make sure that that priority was being funded at the same level as other priorities across the state. And what you'll note here is the cost of issuance and the debt service for the bonds. I just wanted to note that the timing of the bond sale as proposed in the budget is October of 2015. So I'm going to walk through what the priorities are around the state pretty quickly. So Northeast region, Baker, Union, Wallawa counties, industrial lands readiness, and increasing the pace and scale of forest restoration projects. Seven counties in eastern Oregon, the priority is around water management and development, both for agricultural use and for in-stream flows, and then increasing the productivity of federal forest lands. In the Gorge region, the focus is on broadband infrastructure and continues to be on workforce housing. South Central region, Klamath and Lake counties, the focus is on infrastructure, support for entrepreneurship, and workforce training. The metro region, their focus is on industrial lands readiness, infrastructure, and brownfields redevelopment. The North Coast region, their focus is on infrastructure, support for marine-based industries, and agriculture. The South Coast region, their focus is on youth employment and workforce training.
God bless.
And the Mid-Valley region, their priorities are agricultural business innovation and tourism, workforce development and infrastructure. However, they at this point have not identified priority implementation projects. They're scheduled to do that at their meeting on June 5th. So I'm going to pause here since we have three representatives who are going to talk to you about the priorities. Mayor Eugene Mayor Kitty Piercy will talk about the priorities in the South Valley. CEO and President of the Board of Brooks Resources, Mike Hollern, will talk about the priorities in Central Oregon. And President of Medford Fabrications, Bill Thorndike, will talk about the priorities in Southern Oregon.
Thank you, Senator Hansel, and I would invite up the panelists that...
I have a quick question, if I may, before you leave.
Please.
I was under the understanding there's $22 million for these regional projects, priority projects, Are they in POP 117, or is that a separate POP?
Senator Johnson, Senator Hensel, yes, that's correct. It's all in Policy Option Package 117, with the exception of $1 million for the Regional Accelerator Innovation Network, which is in the Innovation Initiatives Policy Option Package.
Well, can we go back to that page real quick then? I'm sorry to delay that. How is that?
So we have $7 million in lottery revenue and $14 million in lottery bond revenue, which is $21 million. And then the $1 million for the innovation initiatives brings us to 22. The other costs that you see on this slide represent the cost of issuing the bonds and then the debt service based on the October 2015 sale date.
Got it. Okay.
And I think one nuanced piece of this is the recognition with the $7 million lottery revenue ask and the $14 million bonds is that some of these projects are operational in nature, and issuing 20-year debt to do operations is problematic.
Got it. Okay.
All right. Ms. Leva, I can't help but say this. These are three regions that are, in effect, potentially competitive with other regions, and they are having the opportunity to lobby the panel. I am just wondering if any accommodation was made for any of the other regions that also have priorities.
Senator Johnson, my focus in putting the panel together was really so that you could hear from the South Valley and from the private sector perspective for regional solutions, and I wanted to make sure that we stayed within the 30-minute time limit.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, if I could just go back a couple of the slides to the one titled North Coast Region. Am I correct that Lincoln should actually be listed with the Mid-Valley rather than the North Coast?
Senator Johnson, Representative Gomberg, you are absolutely correct. Yes.
Thank you.
Even a blind squirrel finds a nut.
You are the double digit here now. So it appears that you're part of two regions. We'll correct that error.
We'll leave it where it is. We'll take the money from both.
Thank you. With that, good afternoon, Mayor Piercy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson and Gomberg. My name is Kitty Piercy, and I'm the Mayor of Eugene. I also serve as a co-convener of RAIN, the Regional Accelerator and Innovation Network, and as a member of the Governor's Regional Solutions Advisory Committee, which I'm privileged to serve on. Our regional solutions team is a strong partner in seizing opportunities and focusing on community development issues in our area. We are working to address water woes in small Lane County riverfront cities, transportation and environment issues at the coast, and port expansions and development. We are also facilitating the rebuilding of a local mill and addressing industrial land capacity in counties and small cities. The team involves a robust and diverse group of stakeholders who traditionally might not have worked together to solve problems. Collaboration has proved to be beneficial to all. Our communities have learned a lot about economic development and the impact of entrepreneurship. We know regions with few large employers need a strong entrepreneurial system. We saw that from 1977 to 2007, all that job growth was generated by companies less than 5 years old. We know startups show consistent job growth even during economic downturns. And we want to help our economy evolve from a resource-based economy toward innovation and entrepreneurship. Oregon needs an environment conducive to entrepreneurial development, and RAIN is our regional economic development tool to help make this happen. RAIN is a regional solutions initiative and the top priority for the Willamette Valley Mid-Coast Regional Solutions region. It is a unique collaboration of the private sector, Oregon businesses, higher ed, and local and state governments that addresses the need in the south part of the Willamette Valley and Mid-Coast to build an enriching and supportive environment for startup businesses and entrepreneurs. RAIN's major goal is to get exciting startups off the ground, grow them locally, and create more jobs and prosperity in the Willamette Valley and Mid-Coast region. Our RAIN strategies include creating business accelerators that provide space, equipment, and support, and build a network of mentors and connections to regional resources. RAIN also focuses on developing pools of regional investment capital, dollars to invest in growing traded sector companies. This has been a challenge for emerging businesses in our region. So here's about the progress in the last year. It has been phenomenal. We have two startup business accelerators have been launched, one in Eugene and one in Corvallis. The private sector, local governments, donors, philanthropy, and higher ed have more than matched the $3.75 million invested by the legislature in the RAIN project by bringing in $4.7 million to advance the program. 20 companies have graduated, and about 14 more are set to graduate soon. RAIN has created more than $750,000 of new investable capital. $1.3 million has been invested in the new companies. These companies are already creating jobs and will be the name brand companies of the future that will provide long-term employment to the next generation. Partnerships are continuing to form, and the supportive ecosystem for entrepreneurs continues to grow. In order to continue the success, build a healthy economic environment for entrepreneurs, strengthen partnerships, encourage innovation, get those innovations to commercialize products, and keep those businesses here in Oregon, what we call stickiness, right? RAIN needs to continue as a viable regional solutions project. Keeping this tool in our economic toolbox is critical to the economic success of our region and beyond. As these companies graduate from RAIN, the region is responding by networking and enhancing the resources and assets needed to enrich their growth and keep them here in Oregon, which has to be the number one goal for all of us. We thank the state for their partnership. I think we've done a lot with what you gave us, and we want to continue to do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Colleagues, questions? Representative Nearman.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. So, Mayor Piercy, can you... I would like to hear some success stories of actual businesses. Do you have any actual businesses that either pay taxes or have created jobs? And do you know how much taxes they've paid, how many jobs they've created? And can you just name companies?
You know, I can't do all of that off the top of my head.
Not everyone, but just...
I'm going to respectfully ask, in the interest of time, if you could respond to that at your leisure and get it to the professional staff, and they'll distribute it to the committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Hollering.
Senator Johnson and Co-Chair Gomberg, thank you very much for the opportunity, members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Regional Solutions in Central Oregon has brought together the private, public, and philanthropic interests, and it's important to have all of those, private, public, and philanthropies.
Mr. Hollern.
Yes, ma'am.
Would you introduce yourself for the record? Thank you.
My name is Mike Hollern, and I live in Bend, Oregon, and I work for a company called Brooks Resources.
Thank you.
The team that we have in the advisory board has served as a quick response problem-solving unit, which has responded to emerging issues and opportunities. And there are several specific success stories that we could talk about. Our highest priority is in Central Oregon has been the OSU campus, the four-year campus there. And that came about as it was really an exciting thing to me when our advisory board first got together, because we have representatives, county commissioners from Crook, Deschutes, and Jefferson County, the mayor of Lapine, the mayor of Sisters, the mayor of Prineville, and we talked about what are the priorities, and we looked at everybody else's, all the cities and the county's priorities over the next several years, and we unanimously came to the conclusion that for the benefit of the entire region, OSU Cascades was clearly the number one economic development priority in our area. And to me, looking at the list of things that Annette had on the screen just a few minutes ago, really is in a way it validates this whole concept. I mean, I assume every region has gone through the same level of detail looking at these variety of projects and coming up with 11 regional priorities. Not that you as legislators wouldn't do a good job statewide coming up with the same thing, but delegating that out to the regions, which is part of this whole process, I think has been, at least in our area, remarkably successful, and it looks like it for Mayor Percy's as well. OSU Cascades will do things like addressing significant gaps in workforce training, in emerging high-tech and biotech sectors, and in creating a lot of jobs. To support this priority, the private and philanthropic sectors have invested along with the state. And I wouldn't underestimate the kind of the imprimatur that we put, that original strategy's priority puts on things working with the private sector to leverage, and with local governments, to leverage more funds into the priorities that that we have adopted. The priorities that are in the budget that you will be wrestling with, and I recognize the fiscal problems and the difficult revenue situation, but the focus in our area are specifically of supporting entrepreneurship by co-locating faculty and programs with training and incubator space for the private sector that fosters collaboration, enhances innovation, and spurs economic development in Central Oregon with OSU Cascades. The second one is a more imaginative one, which is a transformative transportation project. We're having some difficulties with the land use around OSU Cascades locating in Central Oregon. Part of that is related to traffic generation. Part of it is related to communication. This part of the package will fund park and ride lots in South Redmond, North Bend, upgrade the existing park and ride lot in Lapine, purchase buses to enhance service to OSU Cascades and to Central Oregon Community College, and add more customer-friendly bus stops by covering them. And we hope to have free Wi-Fi on these buses to get students to use them, reducing traffic and making the whole thing a more exciting project. And we'll be offering incentives for carpooling and ride sharing as well. And that's, I know you're on a tight time schedule, but that's we're real supporters of regional solutions, and thank you for hearing us.
Colleagues, questions? I have one. Mr. Holloran, I understand that most transit needs some degree of subsidization, but mm-hmm. capital acquisition for transit is heavily subsidized by the federal government. Rather than looking at precious, highly fungible dollars for bus acquisition, have you thought about, as the mosaic of funding for your project comes together, looking to the feds for the bus acquisition?
Specifically, I haven't talked to Becky Johnson, the OSU CEO, but I mean that's exactly the kind of thing that we would, if it's at all possible and if there's money there, we would like to use what we can get from the state to leverage additional funding or to start to share it. But you're absolutely right.
I would commend that to your consideration, because part of the beauty of Oregon Solutions and regional solutions is funding from a variety of sources, because no one entity can do the heavy lift anymore. The projects are too big and too expensive.
Thank you for the good advice.
Mr. Thorndike, if you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Great, thank you. My name is Bill Thorndike. I'm from Medford, Oregon. I'm the third-generation owner of a steel fabrication company in Medford. I also have the privilege of chairing the Southern Oregon University Board as it takes over July 1st, and also had the great privilege of being the chair of the final selection committee for Connect Oregon 4 and 5, which gave me a wonderful opportunity, much like this, to see how local solutions and local prioritizations of projects can make your job a little bit easier, in that we get projects done in our communities that we desperately need and want. So it's great being the convener for Southern Oregon, and with the changes that have been made to the Regional Solutions team, it has been interesting that as resources have been attached to us, that of course it got the interest of the Association of Oregon Counties and the League of Oregon Cities, and of course they're great partners now at the table relative to this process. We cover basically Jackson and Josephine County, and it's a great pleasure to identify some projects that we're very excited about. Our number one priority is working with a private family farm called the Fry Family Farm in Southern Oregon that produces organic vegetables and produce, and they are doing it at a scale where they produce enough to be able to meet more than the needs of the local farmers markets. But as we know, to sell that produce into the stream of commerce so that our friends in Portland can pick it up at Whole Foods, you have a certification and a process to make sure that that food is being treated safely and effectively. What the Fry family is willing to do is expand the size of their operation that they want to build to be able to allow other organic farmers in Southern Oregon to be able to sell their produce. Needless to say, as we know, when you do something like this on agricultural land, you interface with lots of different state agencies, and again, the Region Solutions process is a great process by which we're bringing together all the agencies to be supportive of being able to do this, and so we have a request in for that. In the little town of Gold Hill, we have an opportunity because of the Rogue River flowing through there and a set of rapids where we have probably one of the most ideal river kayaking courses in the United States, world-class Olympic quality. The little town of Gold Hill, a complex little town, has come together and identified this as being a game changer for Gold Hill, much as what happened in Hood River with the sailing. So we're looking at what does it take, as you can well imagine, to do something in the Rogue River is a long, arduous process of different types of research and stuff. We're well along this route. We've put private money, federal money, state money towards that. We're at that next stage of planning out a wonderful park in Gold Hill that could be an economic driver. It's interesting, in Josephine County, that the project that Commissioner Hare brought forward to us would normally, you think, would go through Connect Oregon. The city of Grants Pass has an airport that serves a lot of small businesses in Southern Oregon, Dutch Brothers Coffee, Krause Craft, etc., where private businesses that are employing and growing in Oregon want to be able to site their planes next to their offices in the Merlin area. What they would like to see us do is be able to use some of these resources to do the planning and the environmental research that are required for a taxiway to be built adjacent to the main runway. We just, through Connect Oregon, were able to grant them money that will now allow those planes to land under more arduous weather conditions. We're working on the WISE project that you heard a little bit before up in Little Butte Creek with a project that would allow ranchers to convert over to different types of irrigation systems that uses water more effectively. So we're excited about that. So those are the four capital-related projects. We also, whether or not funding's available this year, but something to think about in the future, again, is non-capital allocations invested in people. And we have what's called the Rogue Advantage Plan. And the Rogue Advantage Plan is taking into account that lots of small businesses are at critical stages where if they could only hire that new engineer or bring in that new marketing manager, but you have to be able to pay them what it takes for them to want to relocate to our communities. But that if the state and through this process, we could augment some of the monies that could be paid to these people to help these companies go to the next stage, that could be a game changer, an investment in people in our community rather than just in capital goods. So that's a snapshot of what we're talking about down in Southern Oregon.
Colleagues, questions?
Sorry.
You have a question?
No.
Oh, fine.
I have two, Mr. Thorndike. The first one is to what degree you have explored doing the taxiway improvements at Grants Pass, which incidentally several ways and means folks are going to be flying into on Saturday to facilitate our meeting. Whether or not you've looked at FAA availability, that money is so generous. It's a 9-to-1 match, one state dollar for every 9 federal dollars. Have you explored that instead of using Regional Solutions money?
I believe that the county commissioners did look at that, and as they well know, that if you have your planning in place, it's much more easily available to reach that additional funding, which is around almost, I think we're asking for under $500,000 for the planning process. The actual runway, the runway taxiway would be around $1.5 million. And again, that the commissioners feel that, again, if we could, in essence, speed this up a bit, that we would then be available for the federal funding to complete that project.
I guess I would just say that master plans are paid for by the FAA, too. And when there is available money, you're going to have to convince me that queue jumping in the name of expediency and leaving all that lovely federal money on the table is a smart thing to do. I just offer that for your consideration.
Thank you.
The other thing is, given your experience with Connect 4 and Connect 5, I would just like your reaction, and I didn't prepare you for this question, and for that I apologize, but there are a variety of projects that are being considered under the general heading of Regional Solutions. They reflect local regional priorities. What if those came up through a methodology or a process not unlike Connect, so that they emanated at the local level, they were vetted heavily at the local level, they came with a local prioritization, and then they eventually fed up into a larger selection, and they were competitive rather than entitlement? What would be your reaction to structuring regional solutions that way, to still keep the local flavor that was reflective of the regional differences, but had a final, more competitive process that was a public process?
Senator Johnson, thank you for the question. I think you need to learn to crawl before you walk and run, and I think that we're working through that process right now. We know that the transportation department, through the regional RVAC, the transportation planning process.
Act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that evolved over a number of years, which I think set the stage for Connect Oregon. And I would hope that, again, that same process, I know that there have been some dreamers who occupied offices in this building who dreamt of how do you more effectively engage local communities and leaders in those communities relative to clearly prioritizing different types of projects. But I think this is a good first step.
Thank you very much. Representative Whitsitt.
Thank you for being here, and welcome, Mr. Thorndike. I was wondering, on the flood irrigation conversion, does any of the equipment that you need fall under the EQIP? That EQIP provides a lot of equipment in the Klamath Basin for conversion from flood irrigation to these advanced sprinkler systems. And I was just wondering if they had gone through soil and water conservation for that, or what the project is sort of shortly, if you could discuss it.
Chair Johnson and Representative Whitsitt, the examples that we already have in the Little Butte Creek area are using some of those funds and some of those different approaches. But again, I think it's trying to be respectful of the local community and prioritizing where they think these types of efforts could make a big difference. The demand and the need, covers thousands of acres, and I think, like anything else, you're looking at every possible funding source to be able to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. Mayor Piercy.
Senator Johnson, I just wanted to add one more thing for Representative Nierman, is that we are keeping metrics on rain. I'll be glad to share those metrics with you if you haven't seen them. And the other thing I wanted to say is that that's a growing thing, because we've just done three cohorts, so we're sort of at the beginning of gathering that data. But the intention is to be able to demonstrate to you with real metrics what you're getting for your investment.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll await your report to the professional staff. Thank you very much. We're next going to move to Oregon Inc. and invite Heather Stafford to come up and make the introductory comments. Colleagues, we're 5 minutes off the pace right now, assuming that each one of the initiatives takes 5 minutes. And Ways and Means, some of us need to leave to go to a Ways and Means on the road. So, Ms. Stafford, welcome. Introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Heather Stafford, Assistant Director of Business Oregon in of Innovation and Entrepreneurship at Business Oregon. And today, let me get these slides going here. So today there's increased alignment between Business Oregon's new Innovation and Entrepreneurship Office and the great work that's been done and is being done by the Oregon Innovation Council. We find ourselves in a moment in time where technological change is happening and the development of brand new industries is happening at an incredible pace. Every entrepreneur, investor, state, and country are looking and working hard to get ahead of this curve and identify areas where they have an edge. Oregon Inc. is our investment in the future. We have a lot to be very proud of, and we have more work to do. To divide our efforts in three primary bodies of work in alignment with our Innovation and Entrepreneurship Division at Business Oregon is innovation, which includes tech transfer, SBIR, federal funding support, research and development, and prototyping. The second bucket is entrepreneurship, which includes business incubators, accelerators, technical service provider networks around the state. And third is capital, so building a pipeline of capital from seed funding to venture funding and state investments through the Oregon Growth Board. Since its first funding in 2007 of $26 million, Oregon Inc. has had a positive impact on the state's economy and culture. Oregon Inc. has supported the creation of over 100 companies through commercialization and gap funding in industries reflecting an average wage of $80,000. In the past 18 months, Oregon Inc.'s signature research centers and industry initiatives have been instrumental in creating and retaining 250 high-wage jobs measured by Business Oregon's key performance metrics. This makes them on pace for an estimated 300 jobs for the 2013-15 biennium, which we will report in August. For every state dollar invested, $7 in outside follow-on funding has been realized for a total of about $600 million in private and federal funding that's followed on from the state's investment. More than 300 firms have used the Signature Research Center's shared lab space, and an important function of the Innovation Council that I think is quite unique are the quarterly audit updates performed for each Signature Research Center and initiative to monitor the effectiveness of this work in as real time as we can. The 2015-17 Biennium Innovation Council's request is $29.4 million in lottery funds. This investment, this funding represents strategic investments by the state in building out identified industries of the future. There are a few funding options outside of Oregon Inc. for emerging high-tech companies to commercialize their innovations here in Oregon. We have an opportunity in the next several years to lead the nation and, in some cases, the world in key industries that are emerging. What we do now to support the growth of these industries will define our state's competitive edge in these markets in the near future. You'll hear from the executive directors of each Signature Research Center in just a moment and the industry initiatives about their use of state funds over the next few years and their goals. And we realize that time is of the essence, and we're a little short on it, so I'll be sitting here. We aim to keep each speaker to about 3 minutes with some Q&A. They are all instructed to follow up with you if you have more thorough questions to ask. So. Just to brief you just a little bit on the difference between a signature research center and an industry initiative, our signature research centers are really at the core of Oregon Inc.'s innovation strategy. They touch all three areas of our Grow Our Own economic strategy, which is innovation, entrepreneurship, and capital. So clean tech, ag tech, nanoscience, microtechnologies, and bioscience are at the heart of the public-private capacity that these centers are building out for the state. You'll also hear from each of the industry initiatives, and these are fast-changing and rapidly emerging industries where rules are being literally written as we speak. Agility and iteration are the operation protocol, and it takes a new kind of management and tolerance to risk to build out these futuristic industries. Oregon Inc.'s industry initiatives represent the vital exploration into these promising new industries for our state. Going forward, Business Oregon and the leadership of the Innovation Council are taking a fresh look at how to build out the great work that's been done with the Innovation Council and take it to the next level. So we're working with Representative Reed to take the next steps in leading these efforts through House Bill 2288, which I'm happy to answer more questions about after. Sean and I will be available for questions at the end of the day and tomorrow as well about the Innovation Council, but I'd like some folks have traveled from afar, so we're going to rearrange the order just a bit from the slides that you have. And first, you'll hear from the executive directors of our signature research centers. So I'd like to call up Skip Rung, David Kenny, and Jennifer Fox.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions while the next panel is coming up? Thank you very much. I don't know what order you are going to bat in.
I guess we're starting with me. Co-chairs Johnson and Gomberg, members of the committee. I'm Skip Rung, president of ONAMI. In her State of the State address last Friday, Governor Brown said, "In this state, we make things, innovative, useful, marketable, and in some cases, delicious things. Oregon industries and researchers lead the world in semiconductors, inkjet printing, and electron microscopes. They are also making key advances in displays, LED lighting, energy storage, medical devices, nanomedicines, water quality management, Internet of Things, antimicrobial fabric treatment, and precision agriculture. ONAMI has funded over 40 commercialization projects between Oregon universities and Oregon startups in all of these fields and more, with the companies raising over $160 million in leveraged funds, mostly private capital.
Mr. Rock, I'm going to interrupt you. I would very much appreciate it if you could get back to the professional staff, the 40 companies, and how much of that has stuck to Oregon. Are those companies still here? Are they paying taxes? Are they continuing to grow and expand?
We can do that, Chair Johnson.
That'd be great.
All but one is still here.
Good.
Yeah. Thanks to your support, Onami has become one of the most recognized and respected technology commercialization programs in the United States. In this brief testimony, I will focus on Onami's evolving commercialization model. The first thing that we've learned is that funding is not enough to build a successful technology business. Professional investor focus on management and market opportunity is critical to research-based companies. Our team of entrepreneurs and residents, all of them experienced CEOs, continues to make our commercialization gap fund smart money. The second thing that we've learned is that our charitable mission is compatible with taking a financial interest in our startup companies and benefits all parties. We know a company values a project if it costs them something. Beginning 2 years ago, we've negotiated a share of university proceeds or some form of equity interest in the company at below market rate of return. Combined with our rigorous project management and fund tranching, this protects the state's investment as well as is possible in the risky world of early stage companies. Third, all we have learned makes it harder for fresh technology spin-outs to meet our rising standards. We are piloting a launch funding program to take greater risks with smaller amounts in an attempt to position a company to merit a larger project. In the next biennium, we propose to expand this program in close collaboration with the university accelerators. Finally, the biggest challenge to building a successful Oregon technology startup remains attracting experienced management talent and next stage capital. Manufacturing-oriented companies typically need to raise significant money before achieving revenue and profit, and this is not getting any easier. We propose piloting a program of direct investments rather than grants administered through universities in a small number of companies that have performed well with commercialization gap funding. The purpose of this is to get them farther along before out-of-state majority ownership makes them a flight risk. In summary, the innovation economy, opportunity, and imperative continue for states that wish to create durable, high-paying jobs in both urban and rural areas, and the competition is only getting tougher. Onami is committed to upping its game again in the next biennium.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions? Thank you.
All right. Chair Johnson, Chair Gomberg, and members of the committee. My name is David Kenney. I'm the President and Executive Director of Oregon Best. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today about Oregon Best's piece of the Oregon Innovation Council proposed budget for 2015-17. Oregon Best is a 501c3 nonprofit which is working to help Oregon businesses profitably address many of the biggest challenges facing our planet, driven by environmental challenges, climate change, global population growth, demographic changes, and the overall strain on the world's natural resources. In addition to the slides showing on the screen here, I've also provided a separate PowerPoint presentation and new materials along with a couple of our brochures, which you'd have access to electronically. We define our scope as clean technology or clean tech, which encompasses a wide variety of technologies, including renewable energy, energy efficiency, energy storage, precision agriculture, green building, water and wastewater, smart grid, and other technologies. In our first few years of state support, we created a network of over 250 member faculty and a network of 9 small shared user labs at our 4 partner universities. While continuing to support research efforts attracting federal funding, our primary focus since 2011 has been on helping clean technology startup companies increase their chance of success and accelerating their path to their market. We currently have over 40 companies in our portfolio who have collectively raised an additional $20 million in private and federal funding since we provided support. This includes 9 companies which have gone on to raise $1 million or more each, and one just recently as last week. And similar to Onami, we have shifted from a grant-only model to one in which we are taking a stake following the program-related investment model allowed by the IRS. In 2015-17, we plan to continue this focus, which includes funding projects in which startup companies are commercializing university technologies or are partnering with university talent and labs to develop, test, or demonstrate their products. We are providing additional services to these companies too, including providing them with mentoring and coaching from our entrepreneurs and residents, connecting them to other regional and national entrepreneur support resources, technical resources, strategic partners, customers, and investors, providing them with specialized skill sets from university interns, showcasing them at Oregon Best Fest, our conference, as well as national events around the country, and helping them to find and apply for federal SBIR and STTR grants. As a side note, three of the companies that we helped during 2014 pursue SBIR funding have successfully received between $100,000 and $225,000 each, including one, Representative Gomberg, you might be interested to know, one is developing a kite that will generate electricity. In addition, our engagement with our university partners will become even more focused on feeding our commercialization pipeline. We'll be focused on finding and helping to advance those clean technologies most likely to become successful Oregon businesses. I'd like to end my remarks today by highlighting three key points about Oregon Best. One is that collaboration has always been a core value of our organization, and we achieve much of our impact by heavily partnering with other organizations like the Cleantech Open, the PSU Cleantech Challenge, OSU's Advantage Accelerator, RAIN, Element 8, which is a Cleantech Angel Investment Group with members in both Oregon and Washington, Oregon Entrepreneurs Network, Oregon Technology Business Center in Beaverton, EDCO and Bentech in Bend, and Sustainable Valley Technology Group in Southern Oregon. Two, the structure enabled by Oregon Inc. supporting us as a nonprofit entity has allowed us to be nimble enough to utilize our state support as matching for federal grants. In 2010, we partnered with both Onami and Otradi to successfully win a $1 million U.S. Economic Development Administration ISIX Challenge Grant using our state support as matching funds and extending our impact. And Oregon Best successfully used the same model to land $95,000 in 2013 and $90,000 in 2014 from the Small Business Administration. In the past couple of years, we have seen a significant increase in the number of innovative companies working in precision agriculture, advanced wood products, and natural resources, all clean technology-focused companies that fit into our scope. We now have 9 companies in our portfolio that are in those areas. A couple notable examples there include DR Johnson Lumber, which is using our support to develop a pilot line for cross-laminated timber, and Honeycomb, which is a maker of the Ag Drone, an unmanned aerial vehicle which provides valuable data to farmers to make more informed decisions about crops, irrigation, and fertilizing. So that concludes my testimony, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Colleagues, any questions? Thank you very much. Dr. Fox, if you'd introduce yourself.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Johnson and Gomberg, and members of the committee for inviting me to speak with you today. My name is Jennifer Fox. I'm the Executive Director of Otradi, the Oregon Translational Research and Development Institute, and the Otradi Bioscience Incubator. Otradi's mission is to fuel economic development of Oregon's bioscience industry and to develop innovative research into products that benefit human health and create and retain high-wage jobs in Oregon. The bioscience industry in Oregon has grown by 31% in the past decade, now has 13,000 jobs within the state. Otradi was created to help startup companies and researchers in Oregon find funding partners with the goal of attracting, growing, and keeping these companies and jobs here in Oregon. And to achieve this mission, we have created a unique continuum of assets, including Otradi Labs and the Otradi Bioscience Incubator. Otradi Labs are proof-of-concept centers with drug discovery robotics available nowhere else in Oregon. In the past 6 years, at our Portland location of Otradi Labs, we have worked with 40 researchers, 40 startup companies, and 150 university researchers. Just last month, we opened Otradi South, an Otradi Lab in Corvallis, to better serve Southern and Central Oregon. Over the years, we have listened to the unique needs of bioscience companies and found that there was a serious unmet need for bioscience incubation in Oregon. Incubation space is about much more than just providing specially built-out labs and offices for startup companies. It's about providing all of the key services that these companies currently lack. In response to startup demand, Otradi opened the Otradi Bioscience Incubator in 2013, which is the state's first and only bioscience-focused incubator. The Otradi Bioscience Incubator offers cost-prohibitive shared equipment and labs with specialized mentoring from seasoned entrepreneurs and a network of bio-mentors, all volunteering their time. We provide companies with mentoring in everything from writing their first small business grants to finding venture capital investment to launching their first product. Mostly, the Otradi Bioscience Incubator is a community of companies at different stages, ranging from single employees to those receiving their first venture funding. It's a physical hub for all of the work that Otradi does to promote bioscience research, product development, and job creation in Oregon. Since 1 month after opening, we've been 100% full with 6 bioscience startups at the incubator. in response to a waiting list of more than 15 companies. We are currently expanding our incubator to house 5 additional startups next month for a total of 11 companies and approximately 75 jobs under one roof. OTRIDE exists to move research into product development and to help create and incubate startup companies. We are nimble and responsive. Current bioscience startup demands are outstripping our capabilities, and we need to extend our outreach to meet growing needs across Oregon.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions of Dr. Fox? Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Dr. Fox, does OTRIDE or any of its partners, do they engage in any kind of thing like human cloning or human organ generation?
No. So our labs are not set up for that kind of research.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Stafford, do you want to call up your next panel?
Sure. Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Gump.
Well, we're switching people out. I'll say that this, I want to word this very carefully. This exciting company that's investigating generating electricity with kites is relying on kites made in Washington State.
Thank you. I'm glad that's a part of the record. Representative Reed.
Madam Chair, as a representative from Beaverton, where this company is located, I plan on making an introduction to the company and an Oregon kite manufacturer.
Noted for the record. Thank you. Ms. Stafford, your next panel.
We've redone the order just a bit, so I'd like to call up Chuck Allen from SOAR, Jason Bush from OET, and Jeff Allen from DRIVE.
Ms. Stafford, we have 2 folks from SOAR. Are you intentionally splitting them up?
We actually are just going to hear from Chuck today due to time constraints.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Chair Johnson, members of the committee, my name is Chuck Allen. I'm the executive director of SOAR Oregon. And as was mentioned, I'm here with my colleague, John Stevens, who is responsible for range operations for SOAR. The advent of the manned aviation industry in the 1920s created hundreds of industries and countless jobs for those states that were willing to make the necessary investments to support a new technology. Today, those states have an opportunity or have an industry worth billions in revenues and hundreds of thousands of jobs. Oregon has just such an opportunity right now. The commercial UAS, or commercial drone industry today, is where manned aviation was, or the PC industry was, in the early 1980s. And it represents similar economic potential. But this opportunity is fleeting as other states and even other countries compete for UAS jobs. There are only 6 FAA-authorized test sites with ranges in 10 states. Oregon has 3 of those test ranges in the rural communities of Pendleton, Tillamook, and Warm Springs. These ranges represent tangible assets of the state and an opportunity for Oregon to establish itself, to establish an industry that goes well beyond aviation and will spawn many ancillary and supporting businesses around all robotic systems, many of which will revolutionize our lives. SOAR, founded last biennium by the state to help create this industry, has been the leading advocate and the driving force behind civilian use of drones in Oregon. Our goal is to develop the Oregon test ranges to meet the standards required by the FAA and advocate for businesses to use these ranges to commercialize their UAS products. We seek to create the same type of self-sustaining technology clusters surrounding the ranges as have occurred throughout decades of manned aviation economic growth. We're closing in on making Oregon test ranges an operational reality. In more practical terms, the expectation for jobs creation in Oregon is 1,510 new jobs, of which 690 are directly related to developing UAS, and 820 are indirectly related. These jobs also represent significant growth in economic value by the end of the third year, with all 3 ranges fully functional. Last month, Governor Brown announced an investment of $1.6 million for upgrading the infrastructure at Pendleton to meet FAA requirements. Similar infrastructure investments are currently working their way through the system for Tillamook and Warm Springs. The $3.5 million that we are requesting this biennium is to provide the essential personnel necessary to take advantage of that infrastructure investment and make the Pendleton range the first of our 3 ranges to fully comply with the FAA requirements. These people are needed to meet industry and FAA requirements, and without them, the ranges cannot fly, cannot succeed, regardless of funding for physical infrastructure. None of this can happen without the approval of our request, and it's important to understand that this is not a like-to-have number. Our like-to-have number was $7.1 million. The 3.5 is the amount absolutely required to allow Oregon to become competitive in this industry, in this industry sector, and bring our ranges up to the level required by the FAA. Chair Johnson, members of the committee, thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much. Senator Hansel.
I just think the record should show that UASs are not kites. I just want to make sure that that's
noted. Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. So when I was speaking to you in my office there, you said that you need it takes 11 people to man a range there. Can you describe what some of their positions are? What some of their duties are?
Chair Johnson, Representative Nierman. I can, but my colleague John can, because he's the one that actually has the notes on the actual headcounts for the ranges.
Maybe you can get that to the professional staff.
We can do that. We can send that over to you. Yep.
Thank you. And I have a question. You put heavy emphasis on personnel. I have visited the two sites that actually have physical structures. I understand there are no physical structures at the reservation. We need some infrastructure, too, radar and some tracking methodology. How are you separating those if your ask is principally around people versus equipping the facilities with the requisite hardware that they need to fly?
My understanding, Chair Johnson, my understanding, as you know, I've been in this position. I replaced Mark Morrison fairly recently. My understanding is that there are other requests going through other channels that are currently being processed or being going through the system to meet those hardware requirements for both Tillamook and Warm Springs, and we have a breakdown of those in the full-blown business plan, which I can supply you.
Thank you very much. I would hope that you would insist on commonality so that we could have a single stores repository, and we might get an accommodation on unit maintenance. If all three of them buy different equipment, we may not get the economies of scale, so I hope you would consider that.
Senator Johnson, thanks you for your comments, and what I've seen, they are similar asks, yes, but I will make note.
That's great. That is brilliant. I like that.
Thank you very much. All right, next.
Senator Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, my name is Jason Bush. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Wave Energy Trust, OWET. Since 2008, our inception, we have relied upon the funding from the Oregon Innovation Council to promote the responsible development of ocean energy in Oregon, to attract and build this emerging industry to Oregon. We are seeking to take advantage of some of the natural assets that this state has, including the wave regime, the manufacturing capability, the expertise at Oregon State University, to build this industry in Oregon. Through the efforts of OWET and the funding of Oregon Innovation Council, we have helped Oregon emerge as the national leader in ocean energy. Within our industry, both nationally and internationally, everyone knows that Oregon is the place to come and do research and development for ocean energy, and that's what we intend to keep pushing on for the next 2 years. We will focus on the same programs that we've traditionally had, including research and development, regulatory and policy reform, environmental studies, and working with coastal stakeholders to move this industry forward. But over the course of the next 2 years, we have four primary goals. First of all, we want to make sure that we receive the federal funding for the grid-connected National Test Center in Newport. This facility, which will be about $40 million in cost, will ensure that companies come to Oregon for many years to build and deploy and test their commercial-scale devices in our waters. That will help ensure that Oregon remains the focus of this industry for many years to come. Secondly, we want to continue to work with companies that are interested in deploying in Oregon. So OWET is the front door for these companies. We make sure that they have the information they need, they follow protocol, that they have every chance of success in their deployments, and that they deploy appropriately according to Oregon's values. Third, we're going to continue to build on the primacy of Oregon's supply chain. We have the nationally recognized best companies working in this industry, as evidenced by the fact that two of the three companies that are about to deploy in Hawaii at the naval test site are actually building their devices in Oregon and shipping them to Hawaii. We want to build on that capacity over the next 2 years. And finally, we recognize that OET must transition off of Oregon Innovation Council funding. To that end, we are developing a new organization called Pacific Ocean Energy Trust, POET. POET will be a regional body that will work alongside our sister states, Washington, California, and Alaska, to continue to assist this industry as it moves forward. We're going to work with all forms of marine energy, tidal, wave, offshore wind, and riverine technologies, non-impoundment technologies, to make sure that the investments that we've made in OET in this state continue to parlay the knowledge, experience, relationships, and values that we have for Oregon. That concludes my comments. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, colleagues. Any questions? Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. So tell me some success stories about OET. So, like, for instance, are there any municipalities or any industries that are using energy that's developed by companies that came out of OET? Or help me out with that.
Senator Johnson, Representative Nierman, members of the committee, ocean energy is still a pre-commercial technology. There have been devices that have come in and out of the water in Oregon. There are devices in the water throughout the world. And there are three companies that are currently tracking for deployment at the Camp Ralea site in Clatsop County. But we are probably 5 years from putting power onto the grid from ocean energy.
Can I follow?
Follow, Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. So I'm looking at the funding for you, and it looks like it started in 2007 or 2008, and it's about $13-ish million down the road. So that's maybe 7 years so far, and $13 million, and you don't have anything that's commercially viable yet. That seems kind of I don't know. I'm probably oversimplifying it, but it seems like just putting a buoy out there that goes up and down or something like that. You ought to be able to get something that's commercially viable in 7 or 8 years, or else maybe it's not commercially viable. Do you want to speak to that,
Senator Johnson, Representative Nierman? I wish it were that easy. The ocean is a harsh place to operate.
I get that.
And the companies are moving quickly toward commercial viability. Within the industry's perspective, it is not a question of whether they can do it. The question is, can they do it at a cost that's competitive with other sources of energy generation? I assure you that everyone in this industry and the U.S. Department of Energy is working very hard to answer that question in the affirmative.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Johnson, Gomberg, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Allen. I'm Executive Director of Drive Oregon. We were first funded by the legislature just over 3 years ago. We've received about $2.7 million in Oregon Innovation Council funding since then. I'm happy to say we've leveraged over $15 million for our industry since then, and over $500,000 for Drive Oregon ourselves. But I'm here really to focus on the future of this industry, and it's important to realize that the automotive industry is in a major transformation. John Gardner with an international consulting firm Navigant, in fact, stated it's the most historic transformation since the years following World War II. And I would argue that Oregon is very well positioned to take advantage of that transformation. And to be clear, because it's the first question I asked when I took this job, we are not trying to compete with Detroit and make cars here. That would be lovely, but not very realistic. But what we can do is compete in a bunch of places in the supply chain, areas like software, drivetrain components, specialty vehicles, charging equipment, other areas. Oregon also offers an excellent living laboratory, similar to what my colleague was saying about OET. We are one of the top deployment areas in the country, and companies want to come where they have an early adopter market in their backyard. I wanted to tell just a couple of quick stories to give you a sense of what's going on in this industry and how we're working with the companies in this industry. One is just recently public, so I can talk about it, in the software area. These vehicles nowadays are less like computers that have, or like cars that have some electronics, and they're more and more they're like computers that happen to have wheels. The my favorite statistic: the Chevy Volt has more computer code in it than a 787 Dreamliner. And obviously, Oregon knows a few things about software and about electronics, which drew Jaguar Land Rover, one of our 110 member companies, to Oregon to open a software center. They've recently announced they're going to expand that, add 50 more software engineers. But more exciting, they're going to open an innovation accelerator where they're going to work with a dozen companies a year that are startups in this vehicle software space. They've asked us to help screen those companies and to help coach those companies and help make introductions for those companies to other folks in the supply chain. A different kind of example in the specialized vehicle space, as I said, we don't make cars, but we do have this little vehicle company called Daimler Trucks North America, which is on our board. We also have other kinds of specialized vehicle companies in this industry. And at least one international consulting firm, ID TechX, estimates this non-car market will be bigger than the electric car market, will be as much as $128 billion market by 2025. So one of my favorite stories here, we introduced one of these companies, NACO, which is one of the world's largest forklift manufacturers out in Fairview, to one of our startup companies, a little company called Curstech that had an innovative motor design. They're now working together, and we gave them a little bit of grant funding to work together on a prototype where they're putting this motor into one of the NACO forklifts. They're working with Professor Jim Long at Oregon Institute of Technology down in Klamath Falls to do the prototyping and the testing. They're going to then test that prototype vehicle in Lebanon at the Advanced Technology Transportation Center, which they're using a dynamometer there that we helped fund as well as part of the Lynn Benton Community College project there. So again, that's an example of the kind of ecosystem that we're building, the kind of relationships that we're building. We're requesting continued funding for third biennium. This will be the biennium that sees our transition to independence as well. We set that goal about a year after I started at Drive Oregon. We set a timeline and a strategy for independence by 2018. We are ahead of schedule, and we expect to be financially independent after this session, after this biennium.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Allen? Okay. Thank you very much for coming. Ms. Stafford, you want to call your next panel?
So I'll call up Oregon Storyboard and our Internet of Things Smart Labs.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Co-chairs Harris Johnson and Gomberg and the rest of the committee, I'm Jenny Modi, and I'm here on behalf of Oregon Storyboard. Thanks for the time and for the support during the 2013-15 biennium. We're a little different than the rest of the initiative, so I'll give you a tiny bit of information about us. We provide, Oregon Storyboard is a 501c6 that provides vital resources to creative entrepreneurs in the state. These are people who are developing new technologies, ideas, platforms, products for the creation and the distribution of content for both entertainment and commercial purposes. And anyone who has a smartphone or a TV at home or has kids knows that there's a huge market for this kind of content. Ironically, there's very little infrastructure or support for the entrepreneurs who want to get into it. So that's what we're all about. We call it the digital storytelling industry, but we include film, video, animation, After Effects, special effects, digital media, and gaming as our kind of constituent sectors within that. Now, all of those sectors are growing slowly and at their own pace, but it's our hypothesis that if we provide a way for them to collaborate, share ideas, and share resources, they'll actually grow at a more accelerated pace and create more jobs.
Our initial Can I interrupt you and ask, sure. How beneficial would it be to your efforts and in growing this nascent sector to have the legislature renew the film and video tax credit?
That's a substantial benefit to Oregon Storyboard members because, for one reason in particular, there's a really, really deep layer of freelance talent in the state in these creative industries that I just described. And in order to keep them here, which is, of course, our objective, it helps to have a steady hum of creative projects that happen in the state, and that's one of the outcomes of the OPIF and IOPIF initiative. So it's a very big support.
Thank you. Forgive me for interrupting.
No problem. Thank you. Our initial accelerator class, we're just really on our first go-round. We're pretty new. It took place this fall, and we incubated 5 companies in these varied sectors, and they all made significant progress in growing their business, understanding their markets. That was a big part of it. Bringing products to market, and they all presented their companies at our demo day to a packed Hollywood theater in January, and 2 of the companies have made significant progress since then. Chroma, which is a technology company, really started as a game company, created a crowdfunding technology that allows for revenue share as opposed to the sort of gimmicks and tchotchkes that you get back from a Kickstarter investment. And this aligns nicely with the change in the Oregon rules that allows smaller investors to participate in that kind of activity as opposed to just accredited investors. Mountain Machine Games is an independent game studio that introduced a new mobile app on the App Store during the accelerator in partnership with sci-fi author Daniel H. Wilson. They've translated their accelerator experience into a discussion with an out-of-state gaming company that is looking at putting $400,000 into development of Mountain Machine's next title. And those are the kinds of, it's sort of a right place, right time kind of industry, and the Oregon Storyboard infrastructure is meant to create the kinds of collaboration, networking, and opportunities that those are good examples of. There's a really, really significant demand for mentorship, professional office space at a low cost, technology tools, and the like from this kind of creative entrepreneur, and there's just very little opportunity for them to get to it. We had 64 applications for our first accelerator class with almost no promotion, and we're just now introducing our next accelerator class. There's a competitive process, and we expect between 100 and 150 applications for between 5 and 7 spaces. As a result of that demand, we're also moving our location. We were housed at OMSI, which was lovely but very small. It was a free space, so no complaints there. But we are moving to a 4,000 square foot retail space in Old Town at 4th and Flanders, which will allow us to serve more companies, larger companies, and then also host a substantial and persistent co-working space, again, to create more of that sort of petri dish of collaboration and opportunity that happens in situ with this accelerator. We've importantly thought about our long-term future. We don't intend to be a persistent requester of money from the legislature, and we've already started talking to Clackamas Community College in Clackamas County, who have a really interesting early stage initiative underway. They're looking to build a media institute off campus in Clackamas County that they really need a nonprofit to run. So even though it's early days, we're talking with them about how Oregon Storyboard can play a role in that. It'll probably take a couple of years before they're up and running, but we're looking forward to that as a way to move off the Oregon Inc. Grant process, probably in the next biennium, and create a long-term sustainable future for Oregon Storyboard to support these entrepreneurs. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions? Do you have any earned revenue to this point?
Earned revenue from the companies or from other investments?
Yes.
We have modest in-kind and cash contributions from Intel, PDC, and a number of other organizations totaling roughly $150,000. And then the companies are just at the cusp of earning revenue themselves, but we do provide seed capital for the companies, grants of $20,000 to $25,000 that are generally done as 2-year loans, one that will have an equity stake based on the company's business organization.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, and members of the committee, thanks for this opportunity to address you today. My name is Miriam Barnard, and I'm the Acting Executive Director of Oregon Smart Labs, which you may know by our former working name, the Internet of Things Initiative. So we've now incorporated as an independent 501c3 public benefit corporation called Oregon Smart Labs, and that's the name that you'll hear me use now and in the future. Oregon Smart Labs is focused on catalyzing the Internet of Things industry here in Oregon. The Internet of Things, which is sometimes also called connected technology or IoT, takes the concept of smart internet-enabled technology, so things like your smartphone, and applies it to an unlimited array of devices, inventions, and innovations. So an example is you know, imagining a tiny connected sensor in an Oregon vineyard that can constantly be monitoring the soil moisture and the air temperature, and allow for location-precise control and the amount of sugar in the grapes and the grapevine health. And that gives that farmer real-time data and controls to result in a significantly better harvest and a stronger, more competitive end product.
I thought you were going to say technology that would run down to the wine store and...
I'm not saying that's not possible. The Internet of Things is the fastest projected growing innovation product market. It was a $128 billion industry in 2014 and is anticipated to grow to almost $500 billion by 2019. Oregon Smart Labs intends to put Oregon at the center of that growth as a thriving ecosystem for this emerging technology. Funding from the state is going to support our IoT Accelerator program, which will equip 12 carefully selected startups to be ready to bring their new products successfully to market. These new businesses will create new IoT products to serve strategically chosen high-impact sectors in Oregon, like agriculture, healthcare, supply chain development. And in addition to creating 12 new businesses and the dozens of high-paying jobs in Oregon that come with them, these accelerated startups will attract tens of millions of dollars in new VC funding to the state and build Oregon's reputation and standing as a leading innovator in the rapidly growing IoT industry. State funds from this request will be used primarily as direct awards for the businesses in the accelerator, as well as for things like technology and prototype development for those businesses in developing their products. This is our first funding request from the state, and we're leveraging support from private corporations, including Intel and others, who have provided some initial funds to support the project. And we're meeting with an additional 12 to 15 prospective corporate and foundation funding partners between now and the end of June. We have a 6-member independent board of directors representing experts from the IoT, tech, hardware and manufacturing, VC, and startup accelerator areas, and we're hiring 2.5 to 3 full-time staff to manage the organization. With support from the state, we are very excited to be launching our first accelerator class in January of 2016. Thank you so much for your time, and I'll welcome any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Co-Chair Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. When you talk about a thriving ecosystem, and I appreciate these innovations that you're referring to, but to what degree does that involve just simple reliability of service?
The reliability of service is a baseline necessity, but the ecosystem, in particular for the Internet of Things, which is when you're talking about a connected technology, it's having a phone that can talk to a computer, that can talk to a device and talk to another thing. So the ecosystem possibility is really unlimited, but only if we have the products to support it. So the more products, the larger the ecosystem.
I'm sure. I'm going to a more base level, and that is the darn thing isn't on. You can't do any of that other stuff. I guess that's what I'm trying to suggest. Somebody sticks a shovel in the ground in Tualatin, and internet goes off on the entire Central Coast, which means we can't take hotel reservations, can't run credit cards, can't ship packages, and it's not about YouTube or Facebook. It's about doing basic commerce. Is that anything at all that you folks are involved in?
I think that there are definitely infrastructure opportunities for Internet of Things. It's not the primary focus. That technology has sort of an expectation that infrastructure will continue to grow globally, and we're seeing trends in that direction.
All right, thanks. We can talk about that more later.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. I think we're done with the panel. I'm looking at Lynn Chesler in the back of the room, and he was not called by Regional Solutions. Mr. Chesler, if you've got testimony, I would invite it in the closing minutes of the ball game here.
How about we just defer it to our discussion of all of our top priorities?
That sounds just fine. And the one other thing, given that we're running out of time, we managed to make it. Mr. Robbins, I'm going to ask at the beginning of tomorrow's session that you might make some brief comments about the effect on your budget of having Regional Solutions and Oregon Inc. embedded in Oregon Business Development Department's budget. This is somewhat anomalous, and I think it might be beneficial for the remainder of the committee to understand the impact that has, as well as carrying a considerable amount of debt service.
Yeah.
All right, colleagues, we made it.
Good job.
Mr. Bender.
Subcommittee members, if I may make one announcement, tomorrow's meeting, we are moving for tomorrow only. We'll be meeting in room H170. This room was needed, and we will send out a reminder notification tomorrow.
Thank you. Ms. Stafford, any concluding remarks?
Sure. Just very, very briefly.
2 minutes.
Less. I just wanted to emphasize the process for Oregon Innovation Council and selecting those initiatives and signature research centers that you've heard today. It's a highly competitive process. It takes months to review these different initiatives and look at these different industries that we're trying to grow, and it's a very valuable process for the state. We look at multiple dozens of initiatives just to pick these few, so these are really the best of the best, and a lot of focus and effort goes into selecting them. So thank you for hearing us today. We really appreciate being here.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, Representative Nierman.
It just occurred to me, Madam Chair, that the electricity from the kite thing was Ben Franklin, and that was done a couple hundred years ago. So.
Thank you. All right, colleagues, any other comments? Just to reiterate Mr. Bender's reminder, we're in H-170 tomorrow. They're hearing no comments and no other business to come before the committee. We're adjourned. Comments and no other business to come before the committee.